Welcome to the first podcast for Innovated Technology. This will be a quick audio catch-up. Feel free to listen to it in the background as we explore the latest trends in technology. Also, a text version of this audio will be available on our website at innovated.tech. But first, a word from our sponsor. Innovated Tech provides simple technology solutions to everyone, at home and at work. Technology should be seamless and frustration-free, but most of the time it doesn't turn out that way. That's where Innovated Tech steps in. We take the stress and frustration and turn it into tech harmony. Your computers will work as you expect it to, your network will broadcast as far and wide as you need it to, and your internet will be safe for your family and coworkers. Backed by 18 years of technical expertise, we have developed solutions for our clients that continue to be used today. Let us figure out the hard stuff while you spend time with your family or work on that one needy client. 888-722-2402. So we're going to start out with Apple. There's a lot of news going on right now with Apple, and most of it is based around privacy and kind of what their expectation is and the moving of that information. It appears that Apple will release their privacy-centric Allow App Tracking as soon as the end of March. What this means for us is, you know, we can browse around, use the apps on our phones, and look at all sorts of different things without the fear of everything that you do on your phone being tracked and logged against what, you know, you could refer to as our global profile. It's funny because when you look at how much information is on the internet about who you are, who we are, you kind of get a scary sense of the gravity of how much information is being tracked by these people. Apple intended to release this feature earlier. You know, it was announced last year. But they extended the deadline for this feature to allow developers a chance to catch up on their new privacy-forward design. It seemed to be more of code for, you know, we want to make sure we're good going forward, even legally, since Facebook and Google and all of those different application developers out there that use Apple's technology framework to release to cell phones and things like that. It's one of those situations where there are a lot of legal battles going on right now. And I'm not a lawyer, but I know a lot of people don't want to be sued. And I would imagine you don't want to be sued. So Apple was giving everybody extra time because that's what they felt they needed to do. If you haven't heard, social media, search engines, and pretty much every other application that you probably use that's free are concerned about the impact this will have on their ability to provide useful information to the people that actually pay them. This could impact their bottom line, and they're now trying to scramble to determine the best path forward. When you sit down and you look at it, it's concerning because the paying members of these organizations, Facebook, Google, anybody else who might want your information, those paying members are businesses. And when you take a step back and actually investigate Facebook's targeted ads, for instance, when I set up Innovated Tech's first ad, Facebook asked me, who do you want to target? Who is your audience? They tried to automatically tune it. And they did a couple other things as well. But when you get down to it, the only way that these companies really make money in their advertising platform is by saying you'll get a better return on your investment if you advertise with us. They're concerned that you're not going to get a better investment now. Everybody's going to be on an even playing field. So that's a big concern for these companies. One important thing of note, and this may come as a shock to some of you, and probably others won't come as a shock, Apple accounts for over 60% of the paying app market. What that means is the people who are out there buying those apps for $4.99, $1.99, whatever they are, the people out there buying those applications, Apple accounts for 60% of those purchase apps. Putting two and two together there, it's not difficult. It's more along the lines of, well, we know this app is going to work and do what we need it to do. It's not a question. And if it does become a question of whether the app's going to do what it needs to do or not, Apple resolves it quickly. I've been through both Google and Apple's platforms in terms of their refund policies and everything else. They're very similar, but the biggest difference that stood out to me was Apple is more limited in the scope of what you can do and their review process. So Apple really puts a focus on looking at a lot of the different features, functions, and trying to prevent a large amount of bugs being released on their apps that are developed for their platforms. If there are bugs, they also put a disclaimer in there. With Android, there's the ability to root, which basically gives you access to the main framework of how the phone is set up. You can download external and third-party applications. There's no certificates that you have to acquire. If you really care about getting an application on your Android phone, you can find it on the internet. Overall, it's a lot easier for someone to find a free app for Android than it is with iOS. And really, that's kind of part of what kept me away from Apple's ecosystem for so long. When you sit down and you calculate 14 years of purchases on the Android Google Play Store, or 12 years of purchases, or 10 years, or however long you've been on that platform, those purchases can add up pretty quick. And you can't transfer those purchases in the majority of cases. Now, there are some subscriptions that definitely migrate over, and they don't really care what platform you're on. They don't care what's going on with them. But ultimately, when you look at trying to transition away from your existing ecosystem, Android, iOS, and whatever else you may be on, you know, there's probably some people still out there on Windows Mobile. When you look at those systems, they entrap you by those costs. And they keep those costs there, and they'll remind you, and they'll let you look them up whenever you want, just to keep you around. I found that migrating from Android to Apple was pretty seamless. I did have to purchase probably $10 worth of applications, miscellaneous things, but overall, it was a fairly cheap investment. And on Android, I had invested a lot of money. So that kind of shocked me. So digging down deeper into it, you know, when you look at the Android ecosystem, Android users expect from the moment they set up their phone, everything to be free. Why? Well, Google advertises that the operating system is open source and free. Their phones for Android are cheap or free. And if you go to any cell phone carrier, they can pretty much hook you up at setup cost plus the first month cell service. In many cases, that's $99 USD before taxes and all those regulatory fees that everybody loves to throw in and has to throw in. With that said, these major companies, Google, Facebook, you know, anybody else out there who might be doing advertising or tracking your information, they need to keep Apple. They need to keep Apple's ecosystem of users happy and available and at their fingertips. If they don't, they could lose out on one of the most important customer bases they have. Further, Apple is seemingly all too happy to replace simply whoever pulls out. Finally, when you dig into the Apple ecosystem, there are additional changes that are being layered on top of everything else. And most companies copy Apple. Samsung made fun of Apple for removing the chargers. Samsung made fun of Apple for removing the headphone ports. When you look at all these different areas of the cell phone that have migrated in the last 5 to 8 years, headphone jacks, they were supposed to be around for forever. But here we are in 2021, and I would say the majority of phones don't have headphone jacks. They don't have removable batteries. They don't have the capability and expansion slots they used to. They don't have SD card slots. They don't have the capability of connecting to certain different little peripherals that you wouldn't normally be able to get for one or the other. So digging into kind of that area, it's one of those situations where when you look at the M1 chip, for instance, the M1 chip is based on the mobile architecture. And if you haven't heard of the M1 chip yet, the M1 chip is the new processor that Apple has released. This is something that came out end of the year last year. And when you release architecture changes, or when you release a new processor, or whatever the case is, there's all sorts of different things you have to take into account. The last time they did this, they transitioned from PowerPC to Intel, and it didn't go well at all for them. The translation software they had built that was supposed to automatically transcode your old software into running on your new Mac, that stuff didn't work. It was slow, it was painful. You would find stuttering and just loss of productivity on those applications. And that was unfortunate. So when M1 was announced, the concern was that that was going to all happen once again. It was going to be a difficult scenario to run any existing applications until the developers released the new applications for the M1 platform. But that's not the case anymore. Rosetta 2, technically speaking, Rosetta is now transforming the entire industry and saying, hey, look, you can put Intel's code on me. I don't particularly care, and I'll run it just fine. There are some minor bugs, glitches, and things like that that people have reported, but generally, the performance and the experience has been overall very positive. So, take into account here that you've got your M1 processor now in your brand new MacBook. They're not going to go back. They're not going to backtrack to Intel again. We know that M1's going to be around for a while. We can tell that the M1 architecture was planned out and properly executed. So since it launched so well and was widely received as the game changer for the MacBook and other Mac processing devices, you sit down and you look at it. It's one of those situations where Apple's ecosystem is migrating into the central platform. When you open up Xcode now on Big Sur, you get the multi-platform option, which basically says, hey, I can divide an application among cell phones, iPads, and a full-fledged desktop, as well as the Apple TV, the Apple Watch, anything else that runs Apple, and have a central code base. That's huge. We're talking development timelines reduced from hundreds of hours to tens of hours to release it on a new Apple device. That's one of the big changes that I can see coming towards us as we migrate through this M1 transition. Further, when you kind of look at M1 as a whole, it's just an incredibly fine-tuned piece of technology. You can get 24 hours or more out of the MacBook Pro 13-inch. 24 hours. That's absolutely insane. I never thought I would sit down and look at my MacBook as a cell phone replacement. I mean, so now we have cell phones that last 24 hours. We have MacBooks that last 24 hours. We have all these other devices and peripherals that can last 2, 3 days without a charge. We're soon going to be a mobile workforce. We already are. Apple's investing heavily into that. So beyond that, you can't even move your mouse out of the dock, which is Apple's start menu, basically. You can't move your mouse out of the dock before the application you clicked on to launch is fully available and launched and ready to go. That's incredible performance. The biggest handicap right now that's hindering the M1's expansion into kind of the multiverse, if so to speak, is it's only got two USB-C ports. Now, granted, you can take a USB-C port and you can turn it into four regular USB ports, but there's still a bandwidth limit on each port itself. And limitations there are no good when you're looking at a professional environment. I don't want to sit down and invest into a computer that only has two ports. I mean, what use is two ports? So you've got one tied up all the time by charging. You've got another one that you plug in your adapter to, and suddenly that's all you've got. You can't go for anymore. And that's difficult to accept. So Apple is releasing a newer, updated version potentially this year. In fact, we're expecting it March. And so when you look at those things and you kind of calculate the odds of survival here, because everything is about the odds of survival, you're waking up in the morning, you're going to work, you're sitting down listening to this podcast, those are all odds of survival. So when you look at the odds of survival for the M1 chip, it's huge. All they have to do is crack the nut. I'm giving you more Thunderbolt ports. And Thunderbolt is kind of this universal term. It used to be only Apple specific. However, Intel opened it up, and now it's available for pretty much any computer you use. You could be sitting at a laptop right now running Windows 10, and as long as it's a relatively new laptop, it's got Thunderbolt ports on it. Maybe only one, maybe more than one. It doesn't matter. The Thunderbolt architecture is now released. So, with that Thunderbolt architecture being released to the mass, we are seeing a huge influx of adapters, accessories, monitors, everything that you use these days now is starting to migrate into that USB-C realm. And that's fantastic. Further digging kind of deep into this is the worst processor Apple's ever going to release on the M1 architecture. And really, that's incredible. 24 hours of battery life. It's absolutely incredible. Thanks for taking the journey with us today into Apple and what their ecosystem can bring to everyone and how they shift the entire paradigm of technology. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions or concerns, you can always email us or contact us at 888-722-2402 or support@innovated.tech.